In the Old Testament, when God was working with Abraham and then eventually Moses, he's established law with Moses, a little bit with Abraham, but especially with Moses. And at the center of that law was what we call the golden rule. Anybody know the golden rule?
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And Jesus is sort of interesting. He affirmed that rule. In the Old Testament, it was love God with everything you have and then love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus affirmed that as the center of the law, that we are to love other people as we love ourselves. And what I want to talk to you about this morning is passing blessing on to other people. We're in a series right now about talking about the five habits of the early church. And one of the things that early church did is that they were keenly aware of the needs of people around them and were happy to pass blessing on to them. So this morning for the children, I did the theology and the theory behind that and the scriptures behind that, but I'm going to look at a lot of the practical side of this. How do we, in our culture, really pass blessing on to other people? Now, it was very interesting because this was the new Christians. They were in a very interesting society and culture. And oddly enough, I think we are in a very similar culture in our day and age. And it's a culture of meism. It's a culture of me first. I'm going to take. I'm going to make sure I get my hand in the till to get what I need before I do for anybody else. And one of the things that made these early Christians so odd, so strange, is that they actually seemed to love other people more than they love themselves. And so they began to bless other people. They began to pass Christ's blessings on to others. And what's fascinating is the church just began to explode. So how do we do this? How do we bless other people? Just three simple ideas. So here's the first one. We must be intentional about blessing other people. We must make sure that we are blessing other people and that it's an intention of ours, that we are setting out to do this. Now, there might be some of you that have already worked on this habit in your life, and so it's already very natural for you. But for a lot of us, we need to become intentional about blessing other people. And it's the way that we will become more generous if we begin to learn how to bless other people. To help us move towards intentionality with this habit, here's a challenge that I would like to give you. And it's actually on the connection card this morning. And we're going to talk about this in just a little bit when having to fill out the connection card. But the idea is I would like to challenge you to bless three people this week and every week leading up to Easter. To bless three people. Now here's the caveat. There's a little bit of rule that goes with this. One person is inside your house. One person is there inside your church. And one person is outside of the church. And then the third person you can pick, whether they're inside or outside the church. I want you to be very intentional about working to bless some other people. In fact, if somebody is in your house, there's a high likelihood that they're probably also inside the church as well. And I've seen that some of us need to work on blessing the people inside of our very homes. Rather than being our homes being a fountain of blessing, in some places, our homes are a place of fighting, and unfortunately, blessing goes down the tubes in the midst of the battles that rage in behind our doors and inside our walls. As we move into this idea of blessing, I want you to consider blessing one person inside the church, which may be also a person inside your home, one person outside the church, and then one person you can take your pick on. Number two, the blessing must be relevant to them. Now, this may sound a little strange to point out, but the blessing must actually bless the person that it's intended to bless. Let me put this in another way. If the blessing you give to another person doesn't do something for them, then it really doesn't count as much of a blessing. And let me explain. The term to bless can have various meanings. Technically, it describes the act of consecrating something or someone by religious rite or word. From the Old English blessing, which was in turn from the Proto-Germanic blessing, it originally meant to hallow by the sprinkling of blood on a pagan altar. When the Bible was being translated into Old English, the term was chosen to translate the Latin benedictor and the Greek eulogion, both of which have the meaning to speak well of, to praise. Later meaning shifted to pronounce a blessing or pronounce happiness upon them. Today, Christians use the word bless in a variety of ways. In most respects, it means to confer prosperity, to confer happiness upon somebody else. And we use that word when somebody sneezes, don't we? Bless you. We're conferring prosperity on them, health upon them. Now, part of the etymology of the term to bless is from the old word that gives the picture of to bring strength to someone's arm. And I love this picture of that being painted. In this respect, to bless someone is to build them up, to fill them with encouragement, to increase their strength or their prosperity. So this gives us the idea to bless could be anything that relieves pain, that makes it easier for somebody through life, maybe lightens their burden if they're going through a tough time or a difficult circumstances. To bless means to strengthen someone's arm. Now, boiling that all down, when we bless someone else, it needs to do something powerful for them. It's going to make their day better or bring them wisdom and strength to accomplish a task. It's going to bring them encouragement in the midst of a difficult circumstance or situation. I love this word, but Mike, can I use you for just a second? Let's say that Mike here has twisted an ankle and broken an ankle, because you've all seen this. Okay, which one? Left one? Okay. So have you all seen somebody do this when somebody's broken an ankle, okay, to help them walk? This is what blessing means, to bring strength to someone who's in need. Okay, thank you, Mike. Appreciate that. So when we have this idea of blessing, it's not just a passing little something simple. It's actually we're trying to strengthen someone else. We're trying to bring them goodwill, to help them move through something difficult. It means to bring strength to their arm. So let me share with you five ways or five methods of expressing blessing. This is where we get down to the nitty-gritty. How do we accomplish this in our culture? How do we do this in our day? In very practical ways, how do we accomplish this? Several years ago, Gary Smalley and John Trent wrote a book. It was called The Blessing. It was actually written and came out in 1986 while I was still back in high school. Now, some of you have heard some of their materials that they later wrote called the love languages. Maybe use that in marriage counseling or pre-marriage counseling somewhere along the line. You've heard about the love languages. This is actually the material that predated the love language concepts. And the premise of this teaching is that we all give and receive blessing in different ways. So the language I use for love or blessing may be a different language than what you use. We may not be speaking the same language. So if I'm really trying to bless you, but I'm not using your love language, it may go right over your head. You may not grab it. It may not mean much to you. And so John Trent, Gary Smalley, they wrote down these ideas of different ways that we need to bless other people, especially inside our homes, but also all the people that are around us as well. So let's take a look at these five ways that we can bless others. Here's number one, meaningful touch. Meaningful touch. The greatest way that some people receive blessing is through a meaningful touch. Now, this is actually sort of funny for me. I didn't grow up in a touchy-feely family. My mom and dad sort of hugged and kissed and that kind of thing, but it really wasn't shared with us kids. We knew that our parents loved us, but we were a sort of touchy, not a touchy-feely type of family. And so it's interesting, when it comes to marriage, one of my big languages is meaningful touch, but when it comes to other people, well, I'm touchy with my kids in Michelle, but when it comes to other people, not so much. And this is sort of funny. The first two churches that I pastored were touch-me-not churches. I mean, they didn't touch one another. In fact, in 13 years that I was at Oakdale, I never once hugged a single guy in the church. And there was only one lady, Bernice Anderson, that I ever hugged as a lady. And then God did the most hilarious thing. He sent me to you. From day one on. And huggy, touchy, and feeling. And I tell you what, for the first year I was here, I was like, these people touching me, And sort of freaking, some of you know that, okay? It freaked me out. But God was teaching me how to love her, and teaching me how to appropriately touch and be touched by others. Now, as we move through this, I want to just put this out here really quick. There are appropriate ways to express meaningful touch and very inappropriate ways. Right now, it's all over the media of inappropriate ways to touch other people. Now, by all means, with your spouse and children, you should be appropriately touching them. But in public, we need to be aware of how to appropriately touch other people and to do it respectfully. With a guy, there's a simple way. If you want to turn a regular old handshake into a meaningful handshake, there's one simple thing you can do. Add a second hand. Meaningful touch. With guys, every now and then, I'll do the guy hug. Let's see. I'll pick on green here. Let's do the guy hug. You know, it's working.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'll do this with guys because this isn't a big deal. You know, the guy hug, all right? Meaningful touch. We need to touch one another appropriately. It's very important. It's very, very significant for us in our lives and just being able to breathe and know that we are loved. Now with ladies, I'll just be honest with ladies, we need to be very careful with people of the opposite sex. So men with women, women with men. If you're like my older sister or my grandma or my mother, I have no problem with you. God's taught me that, and I'm okay with that. If you're my age, because I don't want you to feel weird, if you're my age or younger as a lady, I'm probably going to be a little bit more reserved. Because, as we're seeing in our culture today, meaningful touch can actually move to a curse rather than a blessing. So while we all need meaningful touch, we need to be appropriate in it. I could camp here for a whole sermon. There's so much research and so much data. The Bible speaks to it as well. Ways that we need to be appropriately touching one another. So that's a way to pass a blessing on. Not just, hey, Joe, glad you're here, you know, but actually passing a blessing on through meaningful touch. Number two, spoken word. Through the words that we use. Now, researchers used to tell us, but I found out this is old research, that men speak 7,000 words a day and women speak 20,000 words a day. And as Dave Ramsey says, they have thus up to 120,000 words a day. So that's his, okay. But research, new research is now coming out on this, and they're finding that in the American culture today, we're actually coming closer and balancing that out to about 16,000 words each. So the gap between men and women is closing significantly in the words that we share. But one of the fascinating things, as I was looking through that research, is one of the things they found is out of those 16,000 words that we share every day, most of those words are meaningless and pointless. Fascinating. 16,000 words. And researchers tell us most of it is meaningless. It's mundane. Nothing of value in it. I find that striking. And here's a question. How do we use our words to share blessing with other people? Do you have someone in your life that's like E.F. Hutton? Remember the old E.F. Hutton commercials?
E.F. Hutton speaks. Everybody listens.
You remember those? Do you have an E.F. Hutton type of person in your life? That their words are of such high value to you that when you hear them speak them, you're careful, you sort of lean in, and you want to hear what they have to say because you know what they're going to say is going to be important. On the other hand, do any of you have people in your lives where you dread hearing their words? Oh, no, I got to talk to who? Because of past history, when they speak, you know you're going to fear criticism or anger or discouragement and so on. And you know that when you get done with this conversation, you're going to walk away almost more drained than lifted up. And so you dread having to speak to them. The reality is we probably have both those people in our lives. And if you can't think of anybody in your life that is of the discouragement side of things, maybe you're it. How do you use your 16,000 words? Do you use those words to bring blessing into the lives of other people? Do you bless your children? Do you bless your spouse? Do you speak your words into them to bring life to them? I want to break the words down into two categories. That's how we're going to get five this morning. First, 2A, words of affirmation. Words of affirmation. For those of you who are chronologically going through the Bible in a year plan, there's several of us that are in our class. You have shown up on my little account, Bible.com. We just read through the book of Job, and wow, talk about some idiots for friends. I mean, here's sort of the scenario. You can read the book on your own, so I'm not going to give you the whole thing. But basically, Satan is looking for somebody to mess up on earth, and he goes to God, and God says, "Why don't you consider my servant Job?" And Satan looks at Job and says, "Well, the only reason that he loves you and serves you is because you are blessing him like all get out." And so God said, "Okay, fine. I'll take my blessing off. You can do things to him, and he will still praise me." And so when Job lost everything, family, his health, he lost all of his wealth. It just went away like overnight. And then Job has three friends and a young friend show up on the scene. And these four friends, for like about 30 chapters in Job, just keep going on and on that, "Job, you're a screw-up. Job, you've done something to make God mad. Job, you're not holy. There's nothing righteous about you. Why don't you just curse God and die? Because God ain't worth serving for you, and obviously you don't love him." And on goes these friends, just railing on Job and railing on God. Basically, these guys' words were horrible. Friends who should have been bringing strength and affirmation to Job actually were bringing curses to Job. One of the ways that we can bless other people is by using words of affirmation. If you're going to work intentionally, bless someone this week, consider using words of affirmation. Words that build them up. Words that encourage. Now, don't lie in your words to them. In other words, if they're standing on a cliff saying, "I know I can fly if I whip my hands fast enough," don't encourage them. Jump! It'll be fine, you know? So don't lie to them. But we want to encourage people. We want to build them up. We want to give them affirmation. Everyone likes to be encouraged. Everyone needs to be encouraged. We need to hear it regularly that I'm okay, that we're okay. Now, I'll tell you what, I am hard on myself as a leader. I know where I fall short. I know what I need to improve and what I need to work on. So usually, it isn't helpful when people come alongside and point out my mistakes and my shortcomings. Usually not a whole lot helpful. But you know what is helpful? Is when someone comes alongside me and they say, "You're okay. You're doing a pretty good job. You can make it through this." And what I find fascinating about those people is that when I know that they have my back, when I know that they're encouraging me 99% of the time, in that 1% of the time when they need to share something they see, guess what? I'm a lot more apt to listen. A lot more apt to heed what they have to say because I know they believe in me. Now, this is a huge lesson that some of us need to learn in our homes. We can be our spouse's worst critic at times. I don't know why, but I've seen way too many marriages where the spouse feels it is their personal responsibility to point out every shortcoming of their mate and their children. It's almost as like they have this false belief or this idea that I need to point out all their problems so that they can get better and stronger, but guess what? It doesn't do the job, and it usually makes things worse. So why not move to blessing inside your home? Why not begin to bring strength to the arm of your spouse or your kids? Why not use words to encourage them and bring affirmation to them? And here is the strange part. When your spouse or your child knows that you love them and that you believe in them and that you care for them, when that once in a blue moon time comes around where you need to point something out, there's a high, much higher likelihood that they will listen. And they'll heed what you have to say. Let's move on to the second part of using our words. Expressing high value. So words of affirmation and words that express high value. Gary Smalley suggests that we pass the blessing along to others by expressing value in them. And this is rather simple to understand. You have to let other people know that they are important to you. And you can do this at work, in the workforce. You can do this at home. You can do this with your neighbors. You can do this with your relatives, just letting them know that they're important, that their work matters. What they do is of high value to you. In other words, you're expressing that you care. This is something we're working on as a congregation right now for our pastoral care team. We want everyone who comes in contact with LifeSpring, and we are LifeSpring, not just this building, we are LifeSpring. And we want every person that comes into contact with us to know that they are loved and that they are cared for. This is one of the heartbeats of the early church. They loved everyone around them, even the Romans who didn't like them, even the pagans, and they let them know that they loved them by their words and by their actions, that they were important, that they were not a mistake, that they were valuable to them. Now let me make a quick note here. We never want to shortchange the gospel. So we never want to go out and love somebody or share words of affirmation with them or express high value in them just to get something from them, like, I want them to come to church. Because sometimes what we can do is we can have a hidden agenda and do these things because, well, we need to get you in our church, you know? And then when they say no to the church, we walk away. That's not true then. The words that you're sharing are false. What we need to do is really believe in what we're saying when we share words of affirmation. So they're not hollow. They're not empty words. They're really what we believe. You are really important. You are valuable. Let's move on, number three. Another way to bless others is by picturing a special future. Jeremiah 29:11, God told the Israel people, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. I love what that verse declares. God wants to give all of us a special future. And a way that we can bring blessing to others is by picturing for them a special future. Now, I'm not talking about paradise after we die. Well, someday, you know, you're going to go to heaven. Woo, that'd be wonderful. I'm talking about right now. Picturing a special future for the people that's nearest you, that's close to you. Have you ever sat down with your spouse and just dreamed about it? Have you ever sat down with your children and said, you know, as I look at you and I'm understanding who you are, I just see you becoming whatever it may be, X, Y, Z. I see this great future in store for you. Now, we just came through the Christmas season a few weeks ago, and many of us run around like crazy trying to find the perfect gift for all the people on our list, and we want to get the list all done and checked off, and so we hit Target and Walmart and the mall and everywhere else, Amazon, to try and get the perfect gift for everybody in our lives. But may I make a suggestion? Maybe the greatest gift that you could ever give to somebody close to you is picturing a great future for them. Believing in their future. Maybe grandparents are sitting down with your grandchild, and rather than getting them the next stuffed widget that does whatever, maybe sit down and say, you know, I think you're going to be a great person as you grow up. I see this in you. I see how you're outbuilding. I see how you're diligent with your work. I just had one of those moments this week with one of my kids. They were struggling, coming unglued, and then the only thing that I could do, I tried to give them some ideas and whatnot, that didn't go over. Never give ideas to a kid that's frustrated, because it's going to backfire. And the only thing that I could do is simply remind them, you know what, you're a good person. You're a hard worker. It's going to be okay. Your future will be all right. Number four, an active commitment. The last form that we can do or use to bless other people, Smalley presents, is actually probably the hardest and most long-lasting. And that is an act of commitment. That is the idea of letting people know that I'm going to be here for you, and I ain't going anywhere. I'm going to have you back. I'm going to be walking with you through this thing called life, through the long haul and through the struggle. This might be the hardest of these five ways to bless someone else, because to grow up with integrity, for this blessing to really be true, it means we have to be people completely of our word. Are you a person who can be counted on? If you say you're going to show up, do you show up? Countless movies have shown that picture, you've all seen it, where a son or a daughter has something special going on, and then mom and dad are too busy with their own lives, and they miss the performance. They miss the special activity. The ball knocking over? Really? We need to be people of our word. If we're going to actively commit to other people, we need to be honest. And we need to be true to it when they come. If you tell somebody, my door is always open to you, and then when they call, you grumble. That's not an active commitment. That's not being a person of integrity with your word. To bring strength to someone else means that you show up, that you step in when maybe everybody else is stepping out, even if it might come at a bad time for you. God loves us, and God expects us to love others. He has abundantly blessed every one of us sitting here this morning. And one of the things I hope you really caught is God wants us to pass these blessings on to everybody else around us, so that everybody around us may be blessed. So here's the challenge. And you have it in your bulletin. Why don't you pull out your connection card? On the back of the connection card, you'll find a blank, a second little check mark there. I will strive to bless 3 people this week. Doesn't have to be huge, doesn't have to be difficult, doesn't have to be in depth, it can go there. But will you commit to blessing 3 people this week? Now remember, the caveat is one person inside the church, which also may be inside your home. One person outside the church, very simple, they're not sitting here this morning. And then the third person, you can take your choice, be another person inside the church, or be a person outside the church. So if you're willing to take that challenge, just mark that. Now let me give you the follow-up so you know what you're getting yourself into. The follow-up is next Sunday morning. I've already made the connection card for next Sunday morning. The connection card next Sunday is going to say, right at the top, if you made the commitment to bless 3 people last week, did you bless 3 people last week? Did you do it? And the next line under that is how. How did you bless those 3 people? Because I'd like to hear what you did. What of these things did you use? Did you use another tool to bless someone else? So I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to a minute to prayerfully consider that, about blessing other people, and then we're going to move right to the tithes and offerings. So John could give us just a little bit of music to think and process, and then you can drop those right in the offering plate as the ushers come in.